Chapter 36. Camilla hit the advancing Lictor like the wrath of the Emperor. She crashed into her from the side, her two knives flashing like signal lamps in the sunlit hall. Dulcinea Kithareya staggered, flung up a parry, gave ground. She needed distance to bring her rapier to bear, but Camilla denied it to her. Every step she fell back, the cavalier pushed forward, attacking so fast and with such ferocity, Gideon could hardly see the individual strikes. For a second or two, she thought Kithareya was meeting the blows with a bare hand, until she saw that a shank of bone had sprouted from the backs of her knuckles. Camilla Hecht off the leash was like light moving across water. She punched her knives into the lictor's guard over and over and over. Kithareya met them ably, but such was Camilla's speed and perfect hate that she could only hope to block the thunderstorm of blows. She could not even begin to push back against them. This gave Gideon time to stand, to ready her sword and slide her gauntlet home, biting the straps tight with her teeth. It was a relief to know she would never have to tell Camilla that her necromancer had died. She was already fighting as though her heart had exploded. "Stop it," said Kithareya. Camilla did not hear her. She drove past the lictor's guard and found her blade trapped in a thicket of spines that had evolved from the offhand spur of bone. The spines, flexing like snakes, began to curl over the guard, past her hand, onto her wrist. Scarcely missing a beat, she stepped in and headbutted Kithareya in the face. The lictor's head snapped back, but no blood showed. She laughed thickly, hoarse. Camilla's body jerked, still pinned by the tangle of bones around her hand. Her other knife fell from slack fingers to clatter on the floor. Her skin seemed to ripple and take on a greyish tinge. She began to wither. As Gideon sized up the best angle to join the fray, a bleached, skeletal hand emerged from behind Kithareya and grabbed her face. Another hand gripped her sword arm at the wrist. Over Gideon's shoulder, the skeleton in the fountain began to stir. Herohark stood at the top of the stairs, hands full of white particles, her skull-painted face as hard and merciless as morning. She flung them out before her like she was sowing a field. From each grain of bone, a perfectly formed skeleton arose, a huge, angular mass jostling and crowding on the stairs, and they poured out in single formation to rush the lictor one by one. She went under in a sea of bone. Camilla hauled herself away from the rushing, grinding ocean of Hera's mindless dead, clutching her knives more firmly in her recovering hands. The muscles in her arms were visibly springing back into shape. Gideon advanced, heart in her throat, moving to take Camilla's place. "Leave it!" barked her necromancer. "Nav, here!" Six more skeletons sprang to her call. They were unstrapping something from Hera's back. It was Gideon's longsword, shining and heavy and sharp. She unbuckled her scabbard and let the black rapier fall, shook her gauntlet off next to it, and gave them both a private prayer of thanksgiving for services rendered, and she caught her sword by the hilt as it fell toward her. She wrapped her hands around its grip and hefted its old familiar weight. The squirming pile of skeletons exploded outward, and so did the floor. Bricks and tiles and splinters of wood scythed across the atrium like shrapnel. Gideon threw herself behind the fountain. Camilla dived behind an old sofa, and Hera wrapped herself in a hard white cocoon. Skeletons tumbled through the air like morbid rag dolls, bone shrapnel pinging off every surface. Kithareya the First emerged from the clusterfuck, coughing into the back of her hand, looking rumpled but entirely whole. From the hole emerged one long, over-jointed leg, then another, and another. A fretwork of bones, a net, a lace of them, long stingers of teeth, a nesting body, a construct so big that it turned one's bowels into an icebox. The hulking construct that had killed Isaac Tetteras filled the room behind its mistress, stretching itself out and expanding, pulverizing a wall and a staircase as it emerged. Its great bone head lolled and loomed above them, mask-like, with its hideous moulded lips and squinted shut eyes. But now this benighted vision stood before its natural predator, the reverend daughter of the ninth house. As yet more skeletons jerked and clambered upward from their fallen comrades, Gideon got up, dusted herself off, and found Harrow standing in a pool of osseous dust and facing the construct with a hot-eyed, half-delighted anticipation. Without even thinking about it, her body moved to take her rightful place, in front of her necromancer, sword held ready. "This is the thing that killed Isaac," said Gideon urgently. The enormous construct was still trying to wriggle one leg free from the floor, which would have been funny if it hadn't been so terrible. "Sextus? Dead." Hera's mouth briefly ruckled. "A necromancer alone can't bring that down, Griddle. That's regenerating bone." "I'm not running, Harrow." "Of course we're not running," said Harrowhark disdainfully. "I said a necromancer alone. I have you. We bring hell." "Harrow? Harrow, Dulcinea's a lictor, a real one." "Then we're all dead, Nav. But let's bring hell first," said Harrow. Gideon looked over her shoulder at her and caught the reverend daughter's smile. There was blood sweat coming out of her left ear, but her smile was long and sweet and beautiful. Gideon found herself smiling back so hard her mouth hurt. Her adept said, "I'll keep it off you. Nav, show them what the ninth house does." Gideon lifted her sword. The construct worked itself free of its last confines of masonry and rotted wood and heaved before them, flexing itself like a butterfly. "We do bones, motherfucker," she said. Her arms were whole again. Her most beloved and true companion, her plain two-hander, unadorned and perfect, smashed through tendrils and teeth like a jackhammer drill. Stinging flails of bone met her blade and exploded into grey foam as she stood her ground and pummeled them with great swinging arcs of good cold ninth house steel. With Hera there, suddenly it was easy, and her horror of the monster turned to the ferocious joy of vengeance. Long years of warfare meant that they each knew exactly where the other would stand, every arc of a sword, every jostling scapula. No hole in the other's defences went unshielded. They had never fought together before, but they had always fought, and they could work in and around each other without a second's thought. Gideon pushed for space. She forced a path, step by careful step, toward the centre of the construct. A tentacle lashed out at her leg. She sliced it open on the downswing and danced away from a stiff whip of molars aimed straight at her heart. Behind her, Harrow took it. It trembled into its component parts, then became a dust of teeth, which settled into a glue that stuck wobbling tendrils together so they broke themselves into pieces trying to smash away. What Harrow did not take, Gideon struck down. She struck its spines with the mad fury and sudden belief that if she just hit and hit and hit accurately enough and hard enough and well enough, she could rewrite time and save Isaac and Jean-Marie, save Abigail, save Magnus. But the size of the thing defied thought, and every strike created shrapnel. Harrow was doing something, shielding her somehow. The air was a hail of sharp particles that ought to have shredded her skin, and yet none of them seemed to reach her. Even so, the whiteout of pinging, ricocheting chips made it hard to see her target. From the corner of her eye, she saw Camilla running through a blizzard of teeth and spines and swinging bone lappets with both knives crossed in front of her chest. Then she was gone, lost to view. Gideon ploughed through a veil of flimsy bone shafts. They were under the bulk of the construct now. Six more skeletons sprang to life and formed a perimeter. These were pillars without legs, thrust through the floor, with the big plated arms and bone-wadded shoulders of the construct in the response room. They grappled great breadths of the construct's tendrils to themselves, and in the clearing between their backs, Harrow flexed her fingers together. She shook finger bones out of her sleeves and slapped the trembling phalanges between her hands like clay. Gideon was busy shearing off questing tentacles that snaked past the skeleton guard and went for her necromancer, catching only a confused glimpse of the slim rosary of knuckles that Hero was looping around her arm. Then Hero flung it upward like a whip, and it punched straight through the monster's midsection, burying itself somewhere deep. She barked at Gideon, "Get clear!" Two of the skeleton pillars, still hugging tangled bunches of bone, bowed apart to make a path. Gideon pulled her hood down over the exposed skin of her face as she squeezed through the gap and staggered clear, away from the nightmare of splintering fibulae and tibiae. But before she could find her footing, Kitherea the First leapt from her place of ambush. She was utterly beautiful and entirely terrible, whole, unhurt, untouched by anything that had happened to her. The wounds from Palamedes's last spell seemed to have vanished as if they'd never been made. It was like she wasn't even made of flesh. A memory flashed up through the haze of adrenaline. "Do I look like I'm in the queendom of my power?" The lictor's rapier thrust whipped out like a fang, like a ribbon. Gideon knocked the stupid fucking thing aside with her two-hander and turned the momentum into an overhead strike. Kitherea raised her free hand, grabbed the heavy blade, and held it still. A thin trickle of scarlet ran from the base of her thumb down the inside of her skinny wrist. Behind them, the construct shook and swayed and thrashed with whatever the hell Hera was doing to it, and Kitherea's eyes locked on Gideon's. "I meant it," she said earnestly. "You were wonderful. You would have made that little nun such a cavalier. I almost wish you'd been mine." "You couldn't fucking afford me," said Gideon. She stepped away and wrenched her sword upward, pulling Kitherea's arm up with it, closed the gap in a hurry, and kicked the lictor's legs out beneath her. Kitherea lost her grip and collapsed into the bone litter strewn across the atrium floor. She coughed and winked at Gideon, and the scattered bones rose up and closed around her like waves, hiding from her sight. From above came a terrible, muffled bellow, a lowing forced through pursed lips. The construct was howling. It tried to surge forward, but the movement kept getting arrested in mid-jerk, as though pinned to the floor. Its tendrils slapped and drove against the ground, tilling up billowing clouds of wood pulp and carpet fragments. The thing gave a frustrated final push and overbalanced, then came down hard on the floor right where her necromancer had been. There was an agonizing crash as the fountain shattered under its weight. Gideon's heart was in her throat, but there was the dusty black figure emerging from the wreckage, ropes of teeth wrapped around her wrists where she had jerked the thing to the ground, a vanguard of skeletons swatting tendrils away from her. Gideon fought her way toward her blindly, clipping off strands and trailing chains of bones as she waded her way to Harrowhark. The construct still pursued her, its legs scrabbling to find purchase as the floor buckled and quaked beneath it, sharpened beaks of bone bearing down on her adept. Hera was forced to split her focus between fending them off and keeping her hands on the reins holding the construct to earth, blood shining on her forehead with the strain. Gideon arrived just in time to plant herself in front of her necromancer and smash a drilling lappet to shards. "I need to be inside you!" Hera bellowed over the din. "Okay, you're not even trying," said Gideon. Her necromancer said, "It's all I can do to pin it in place, so you need to finish it for me. Breach the legs. I will show you exactly where, and then I can keep it quiet for a while." "Seriously? How?" "You'll see," said Hera grimly. "I apologize, Nav. Get ready to move." The construct crooned in its chains. The central rod that Hera had somehow awled through its trunk was bowing dangerously. Gideon dove back into the affray of joint and gristle with her sword scything before her and, just as in the response room, felt another presence slide into her mind like a knife into a pool of water. Her vision blurred out and something said in the back of her mind. On your right, eye level. It wasn't a voice precisely, but it was Harrowhark. Gideon pivoted right, longsword held high. The first leg of the construct loomed before her, a weighty breadth of impenetrable bone. But the back of her mind told her, Wrong! Inch higher! Pierce! Gideon re-hefted the weight of her sword in her hands, steadied the pommel with the butt of one palm, and thrust it home. The bone was thinner here. Across her softened sight, a light fizzed in and out of vision, the exact same corona of light that had happened 1,000 years ago, 100,000, a myriad of myriads, inside the first trial chamber. She pulled her sword free and the leg buckled. Half a dozen tendrils came after her. They would have given her an interesting array of new air holes for speed, but a skeleton staggered out of the darkness and took most of the blows, jawbone crushed into powder as a tendril lashed open its skull. Another skeleton lurched in where its comrade had died, but this one dashed past Gideon, over to the glimmering wound she had carved into the leg, and it thrust its arm into the gash. Then it melted. Gideon had a few seconds to watch as it sludged into shining silvery white bone matter. With a little sizzle of evil-smelling steam, it shrouded the wound and the bottom of the leg in a lahar of hot bone gunge. She tore her gaze away to skid beneath the heaving torso of the beast, narrowly dodging another few desperate tendrils, cutting her way through a damp nest of them as they unfurled and regrew themselves like the coils of a razor-sharp plant. The leg closest to her had found purchase on the floor with its dainty, sharp-capped foot, so much like the leg of an arachnid, and seemed to be in the process of levering the whole thing upright. The back of her head said, It's above you. Gideon slipped her grip down the handle of her sword, her forearm alarmed with the effort, tip wavering as the leg shifted and hesitated above her. The back of her head said, Now! This one was harder. She didn't have as much purchase. Gideon rammed her sword upward, getting a grip on the pommel and shoving into the limb again as plates of bone splintered overhead and dried flakes of marrow spun down like confetti. The leg tumbled down like a cut tendon. Yet another skeleton appeared next to her and, as she withdrew the sword, plunged into the shining gap. It too dissolved into the hot, foul muck that slid inside the construct's body and enrobed the rest of the leg, dripping down into the floor, cooling rapidly. The hard shine of it and the suppressed agony of triumph in the back of Gideon's head made her eyes water, and she was filled with a weird pride that was all her own. Holy shit! Perpetual bone! Hero had actually cracked it! She was too busy admiring her necromancer to catch the thick rope of vertebrae that looped around her waist and cinched tight. The connection in her mind stuttered and disappeared. Then her vision sharpened, rendering everything happening to her in bloody clarity. Before Gideon could say, Oh my fucking word, she was plucked off her feet, hoisted upward, and flung bodily into the air. For one vertigo-inducing moment, she was above the battlefield. She sailed past the huge mask-like face of the bone construct, a thick coating of regenerating bones seeping down its legs in rivulets, free-falling, with an aerial view as Camilla danced through the chaos toward the calm and fragile figure of Kitherea the First, who stood watching her approach. Gideon tried to twist in the air, if she could just contrive to hit a window rather than the wall. She was caught with a force that jangled her teeth in her mouth. A spindly pillar of skeletal arms had risen up from the maelstrom to stop her in mid-career, 100 bone fingers scoring bloody ribbons over her back, but she was not splattered against the wall, which was the main thing. The pillar of arms was destroyed by a long sweeping blow from one of the construct's innumerable bone whips, and she fell to earth again, gravity arrested by the hands helpfully piling themselves up to reduce her fall to terrible from obituary. She landed in a pile next to her necromancer, and her knee went crunch. "I have bested my father," said Hero to nobody, staring upward at nothing, alight with fierce and untrammelled triumph. They were both lying supine on a pile of what felt like feet. "I have bested my father and my grandmother, every single necromancer ever taught by my house, every necromancer who has ever touched a skeleton. Did you see me? Did you behold me, Griddle?" This was all said somewhat thickly, through pink and bloodied teeth, before Hero smugly passed out. The dust was clearing. The construct could not move. It was making low, plaintive grunts as it thrashed in its half-coffin of regenerating ash. With its tentacles, it picked and smashed at the bone cocoons on its back legs, but as soon as it broke some off, the stuff simply crumbled back into being. Now that it was concentrating so completely on itself, Gideon could find the Cavalier of the Sixth. Camilla, as she'd seen from above, had caught up with Kitherea the First. She had one hand in the lictor's singed curls, dragging her head back. The other hand pressed a knife against the smaller woman's throat. This would have been a commanding position, except that the knife blade was quivering in place. Its edge creased the pale skin, but it hadn't drawn blood, even though Camilla seemed to be leaning on it as hard as she could. Whatever terrible force was holding the knife at bay was also slowly peeling the skin from the Cavalier of the Sixth's hand. "You're a nice girl," the lictor said. "I had a nice girl as a cavalier, too. Once. She died for me. What can you do?" Camilla said nothing. Her face was slick with sweat and blood. Her crop of dark, blunt-cut hair was powdered grey with bone. Kitherea looked faintly amused by the blade that was a finger's breadth away from being buried in her jugular. She drawled, "Is this meant to kill me?" "Give me time," said Camilla through gritted teeth. Kitherea gave this due consideration. "I'd rather not," she said. Gideon saw, as Camilla could not, the tentacle of bone that wound silently upward from the mess behind the cavalier, tipped with a vicious point the length of a duelist's dagger. Even if she'd had a pristine knee and no necro to haul, Gideon was too far away to save her. The barb drew back like a poised stinger, and Gideon yelled, "Come!" Perhaps it was the yell. Perhaps it was Camilla's extraordinary instincts. The Sixth Cav twisted sideways, and the hook that should have punched through her spine drove into the meat of her shoulder instead. Her eyes went wide with shock, and the knife fell from her half-flayed hand. Kitherea took the opportunity to shove her contemptuously in the chest, and Camilla toppled backward onto the ground, the sharpened bone still buried in her flesh. Kitherea took up her rapier. In a panic, Gideon began trying to kick her futile way through a jungle of yellow bone, but putting her weight on her bad leg made her stagger and almost drop. Camilla was struggling herself free of the bone skewer, but another tendril had snaked up across her thighs, trapping her against the floor. The lictor stood above her with her green sword gleaming in the light. "You can't hurt me," said Kitherea, almost despairingly. "Nothing can hurt me anymore, Cavalier." The sword glittered. Gideon thrashed through a mesh of bones that her adept could have parted mid-yawn. As the lictor drew back her arm for a clean thrust into Camilla's heart, 4 inches of bloodied steel emerged from her belly. Camilla stared up at her as though trying to work out why everything hadn't gone black. A red stain was spreading across the thin bedsheet. The lictor's face didn't change, but she turned her head slightly. A pale head was now nearly pillowed on her shoulder, peeking over as though to make sure the sword had hit home. Colourless, fair hair spilled over Kithareya's collarbone like a waterfall. The figure behind her smiled. "Spoke too soon, old news," said Ianthe. "Oh," said Kithareya. "Oh my, a baby Lictor." The construct was stuck fast in the trap that Harrowhark had laid for it, and behind them, Gideon could hear its central bulk straining to see what had pained its mistress, like a great skull swiveling in its web. It was held fast, but it still had range, and it lifted its spines to even the fight. Ianthe ran her free hand over the blood trickling down Kithareya's hip. She flicked hot drops over her shoulder, where they hung in the air, sizzling. They ran together like quicksilver, spread out, widened and flattened into a shimmering, transparent pink sheet. Ianthe narrowed her watercolour eyes and pointed her free hand upward. The sheet tightened, a wide, watery disk of blood separating the two lictors from the construct. A barbed bone stinger drove straight at Ianthe's head, hit the shimmering disk and dissolved. Gideon body-checked her way clear, hauling herself to a corner of the room as far away from the construct as possible. She wasn't thrilled about approaching the embracing lictors, but if she played her cards right, she could still get Harrowhark and Camilla out of here. Another stinger, then another, hurtled into the blood disk and evaporated. Despite herself, she turned to watch. The construct stiffened a dozen of its tendrils, 2 dozen, aiming them like javelins at Ianthe's tiny form, and Gideon remembered Isaac Tetteris impaled on 50 spines at once. As Gideon passed it, Ianthe's blood pool spun even wider, an aegis, a shield. The construct struck from its stuck position, with its whole gathered array of swift spears, enough of them to reduce Ianthe to a double handful of chopped meat. Every single one went up in a cloud of bad-smelling steam. The remaining stumps drew back in confusion. The construct swayed, and bones dropped free from its superstructure here and there, rattling down to join the general debris around its trapped legs. There was suddenly a lot more space. Injured as well as pinned, the construct seemed to be drawing back on itself, pulling in its remaining limbs as if trying to keep them away from Ianthe. Gideon snuck past the foot of the dais in time to see Kithareya smile. "I've always wanted a little sister," she said. She walked away from Ianthe's sword with a bad liquid sound. Camilla was still wriggling in place, trying to tug herself free of the spike in her shoulder, and Kithareya stepped on her, treading on her collarbone as thoughtlessly as on a ridge in the carpet. Once she was a couple of paces clear, she turned and fell into a beautiful, fluid-ready stance. She kept running her fingers over the blood at her abdomen, apparently amazed by her capacity to bleed. Gideon wished she was less interested and more dying, but you had to take victories where you could get them. The other, much newer lictor, raised Nibirius's sword, kicking bones away for footing. "I've tried the sister thing already," said Ianthe, circling around to one side, "and I wasn't any good at it." "But I have so much to teach you," said Kithareya. They both charged. Once upon a time, it would have been pretty cool to watch the perfect showman sword of the Third House compete against an ancient and undiluted warrior of the Seventh. But Gideon was crouching down next to Camilla and trying to gauge whether or not her own kneecap was trying to slide off somewhere weird. She had laid down the unconscious Harrowhark behind a pillar on a pile of the softest-looking bones, with her long sword for company, and was wishing fervently that her necromancer was awake. She grabbed Camilla's shoulder in one hand and the slick bone spur in the other, said, "Sorry," and pulled. Camilla screamed. Gideon flung the bloodied spike away, got her arms under Camilla's armpits and pulled. Camilla bit her tongue so hard that blood squirted out her mouth, but Gideon heartlessly dragged her away from the ongoing brawl and into cover next to Harrowhark. Gideon started to look her over to see if her intestines were fountaining out or something, but Camilla grabbed her sleeve. Gideon looked down into her solemn, obstinate face, and Camilla said,
"He say anything?"
Gideon wavered.
"He said to tell you he loved you," she said.
"What? No, he didn't."
"Okay, no, sorry. He said you knew what to do?"
"I do," said Camilla with grim satisfaction, and laid herself back down among the bones. Gideon looked back at the fight. It was not like watching Ianthe and Silas go at it. Ianthe had wiped the floor with Silas while simultaneously skirmishing with Nibirius's soul. A fight between two lictors was a sword fight on a scale beyond mortal. They moved almost faster than the eye could see, each clash of their swords sending great shockwaves of ash and smoke and aerosolized bone billowing outward. The spacious atrium of Canaan House had been built to last, but not through this. The floor splintered and bowed dangerously wherever the construct had dragged itself. The tentacles dug through the floorboards, burrowed out again in showers of rotten timber and bone, and as Ianthe and Kithareia fought, parts of the room exploded at their passing, ancient beams and pillars giving up with screams of falling rock and wood. Brackish water from the fountain had spattered the floor and trickled into the cracks. Cracks! Shit! The floor was cracking! Everything was cracking! Huge fissures separated Gideon from the doors. Ianthe, a lock of her colourless hair in her mouth, chewing furiously, raised her hand, and a gushing column of black arterial blood burst upward, lifting Kithareia 20 feet into the air and dropping her. She hit the ground awkwardly, and as she staggered to her feet again, Ianthe stepped up, hand sparking and flickering with harsh white light, and hit her with a tremendous right hook. The punch would have spun Marshal Crux's scabrous, plate-clad bulk around 3 times like a top and left him on the floor seeing little skeletal birdies. It knocked Kithareia clean through the wall. The wall was already feeling pretty sorry for itself, and at this last insult it gave up entirely and collapsed, with a terrific rumble and crash of rock and brick and bursting glass slumping outward onto the garden terrace. Daylight flooded through, and the smell of hot concrete and wood mould filled the air. The potholed floor groaned as if threatening to follow suit. Camilla, who had guts of steel and the pain tolerance of a brick, wobbled to stand. Gideon wove her arm beneath Camilla's sword arm before the 6th Cavalier could protest, retrieved the birdbone bundle of her necromancer, and staggered outside as fast as this crippled procession could manage. There was simply nowhere else to go. The salt wind from the sea blew hot and hard through holes in the glass that sheltered the expanse where mouldering plants continued to dry out on their great trellises. Insensitive to the situation, Dominicus shone down on them, cradled in the unreal cerulean of the first sky. Gideon laid Harrowhark down in the shadow of a broken-ass wall that seemed as though it wouldn't crumple down and squash her yet. Camilla slumped next to her, swords crossed over her knees. At least this place had significantly fewer bones. Ianthe strode down a low flight of stairs, sword in hand, hair rippling white-yellow in the breeze. Dead leaves and plant matter drifted down around her, disturbed by the crumbling wall. Kithareia was picking herself up off the flagstones where she'd been hurled, and as Ianthe lunged at her again, it was obvious she was on the defensive. She was not as quick as Ianthe. She was not as reactive. She would still have speared Gideon through in the first 10 seconds of a fair fight, but against another lictor, things seemed to be going wrong. Ianthe grew more vicious with each hit. As Kithareia's blood flew into the air, she was freezing it in place,
manipulating it, stitching long red lines through the space around and between them. Every time Kitherea got hurt, and she was getting hurt now, bleeding like a normal person with none of her earlier invulnerability, the web of blood grew in size and complexity, until it looked like she was dueling in a cage of taut red string. Nor was that the worst of it. As Gideon watched, somewhere between horror and fascination, the earlier wounds, the ones Palamedes had inflicted when he blew up the sick room, began to reopen. Strips of skin along the lictor's arms blackened and curled, a big, messy gouge split down her thigh, independent of Ianthe's blade. Even the curly hair started to sizzle and crisp back up. "What the hell?" objected Gideon, more to relieve her feelings than in hope of an answer. "She hadn't healed," said Camilla, weakly from beside her. Gideon glanced around. The other Cav had dragged herself up into a sitting position against the wall and was watching the fight with grim, professional eyes. Of course, cavaliers from houses with more than one living necromancer probably saw Necromancer's Jewel all the time. "She'd just skinned over the damage. A surface fix. Hides the cracks. To really heal, she needs thalagy, life force, and she hasn't got any to spare." "Oh, yeah," said Gideon. "Sextus gave her turbo cancer." Camilla nodded with enormous personal satisfaction. "Well," she said, "that'll do it." Ianthe's magic was as efficient and lean as Nibirius's swordsmanship, neat and contemptuous, clean and too perfect, not a beat missed or a second's hesitation. Kitherea stumbled away from her onslaught, and Ianthe closed the trap. The cage of blood suddenly contracted, tightened, clinging to the older lictor like a net. Kitherea stood tangled in it, not even bothering to try to fight free, eyes closed to slits. Her hair was scorched almost down to stubble. She was struggling to breathe. Her shrapnel wounds were gaping red and fresh, and her knees were buckling. The smell of blood and leaves was overpowering. Ianthe stood before her, panting now herself. She kept shaking her head as though to clear it, kept rubbing her temples fretfully, but she was gleaming and triumphant, sweating, smug. "Tired," she said. Kitherea opened her eyes and coughed. "Not particularly," she said, "but you're exhausted." The filmy red net dissolved to nothing. It didn't even fall away from her. It seemed almost to be absorbed back through her skin. She straightened up, stepped forward, and grabbed Ianthe's throat in one fine-boned, delicate hand. Ianthe's eyes bulged, and her hands flew up to clutch at the other woman's wrist. "Just like a child, all your best moves first," said Kitherea. Ianthe squirmed. A thread of blood coiled in the air around her, uselessly, and then spattered to the ground. The ancient lictor said, "You aren't completed, are you? I can feel him pushing. He's not happy. Mine went willingly, and it hurt for centuries. If I'm old news, you're fresh meat." She tightened her grip on Ianthe's throat, and the dreadful, bone-deep suction of siphoning sent an icy ripple throughout the sheltered terrace. The trees and trellises shook. This was soul-siphoning as Gideon had never felt it before. Colourless at the best of times, Ianthe was now as blank and tintless as a sheet. Her eyes rolled back and forth in her head, and then there was no eye to roll. She jerked and squealed, pupils gone, irises gone, as though Kitherea had somehow had the ability to suck them out of her skull. "No!" cried Ianthe. "No! No! No!" The great wound in Kitherea's thigh was starting to weave itself back up. So too were the burn marks all over her arms and her neck. Her charred hair was growing back in, rippling out in pale brown waves from her skull, and she sighed with pleasure as she shook her head. "Okay," said Camilla in carefully neutral tones. "Now she's healing." The thigh wound closed up, leaving the skin smooth as alabaster. Hitheraya dropped Ianthe dismissively to the ground in a crumpled-up heap. "Now, little sister," she told the grey-lipped third princess, "don't think this means I'm not impressed. You did become a lictor, and so you'll get to live for a while. But I don't need your arms and your legs, so..." She rested one delicate foot on Ianthe's wrist, and Gideon rose to her feet. The sharp shank of bone extended from her knuckles, a long butcher's blade with a wicked heft. Kithareya sliced down. Bright red blood sprayed in the sunshine as Ianthe's right arm came off just above the elbow. Ianthe, too weak even to scream, made a keening sound. By this point, Gideon had already lurched forward two steps and regretted it. Her kneecap was absolutely not where it should have been. She tottered to the side, letting her sword drop one-handed, pressing her other over the knee and cursing the day she had been born with kneecaps. Kithareya was shifting to the other side, the other limb, judging the distance with her bloody "Duck!" called Camilla. Camilla had somehow propped herself on the arm with the mangled shoulder wound, which was in no condition for propping. Her good arm was up behind her head, holding the blade of her knife. Gideon ducked. The knife whistled over the top of Gideon's head in a flashing blur and buried itself in Kithareya's upper back. This time Kithareya screamed. She went stumbling away from Ianthe's prone form, and Gideon saw what Camilla had been aiming at. A lump, a delicate swollen mass right next to Kithareya's shoulder blade. It bulged out only slightly, but once you saw it, it was impossible to unsee, especially with a long knife buried squarely in its centre. Kithareya fumbled one hand over her shoulder, bone appendage drifting into dust, groping for the knife. She found it. She pulled it out, drawing a spurt of appalling black and yellow liquid from the wound. The lictor turned her head and coughed miserably into the crook of her elbow. Then she looked at the knife, wondering at it. She turned her head to look at Camilla and Harrow and Gideon. She sighed pensively and ran one hand through her curls again. "Oh no," she said. "Heroics." She dropped the knife, fell gracefully to one knee beside Ianthe, and lifted a limp arm, the one that was still connected to her body, in a cruel mockery of hand-holding. Gideon thought for a bad second she was going to pull the limb clean off, and wondered how far she could throw a longsword. Except, no, her longsword was never going to leave her hands again, thank you. But Kithareya was just siphoning. There was the deep gut lurch as energy drained from the younger lictor to the older, knitting the gross knife wound back up again. "An inadequate lictor," said Kithareya, as though giving Gideon and Camilla a hot tip on stain removal, "still makes a perfect power source, an everlasting battery." She stood back up and wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. Then she began walking toward Gideon, calm, almost insolent in her lack of aggression. This was somehow much scarier than if she'd stalked forward with a hateful glare and a rill of mad laughter. Gideon planted herself before Camilla and the unconscious body of her adept and held her sword aloft. They were alone in a back area of the courtyard, a little area not yet buried in rubble or tilled up by the titanic fight between two immortal sorcerers. Dead trees bowed overhead. Gideon stood behind the iron fence that had once protected some herbaceous border, as though its bent, bowed spikes would be good for anything other than throwing herself down on as one last fuck you salute. Camilla was huddled in a corner, now standing upright. That was probably her own last fuck you salute, but her wounded arm hung uselessly. She had lost a lot of blood. Her face was now pallid olive. "Ninth," said the sixth impatiently. "Get out of here. Take your necromancer. Go."
"Hell no," said Gideon. "It's time for round two."
She considered that.
"Wait, is this round three now? I keep losing count."
Kitherea the First was brushing bloodstains off her makeshift dress, the blood leaching into her fingers as though it obeyed the merest touch of her fingertips. She vaulted daintily into their part of the courtyard and smiled Dulcinea's smile at Gideon, dimpling, bright-eyed, as though they both knew something extra nice that nobody else did. "There's that two-hander," she said admiringly.
"Want a closer look?" said Gideon.
The lictor arched her free hand languorously behind her back. She slid into position, weighting herself on her back foot, the sword in her hand luminous, tinted green like still water or pearls. "You know you can't do this, Gideon of the Ninth," she said. "You're very brave, a bit like another Gideon I used to know, but you're prettier in the eyes."
"I may be from the Ninth House," said Gideon, "but if you say any more cryptic shit at me, you're going to see how well you can regenerate when you're in 18 pieces."
"Cry mercy," said Kitherea. The dimple was still there. "Please, you don't even know what you are to me. You're not going to die here, Gideon, and if you ask me to let you live, you might not have to die at all. I've spared you before." Something ignited deep in her ribcage.
"Jean-Marie Chateau didn't ask for mercy. Magnus didn't ask for mercy. Or Isaac, or Abigail. I bet you Palamedes never even considered asking for mercy."
"Of course he didn't," said the lictor. "He was too busy detonating." Gideon the Ninth charged. Kitherea went straight for her heart, no foreplay. But this was a Gideon who had trained with a double-handed sword since before she could even hold the damn thing. This was a Gideon who had lived her entire life behind the hilt of a two-hander. No more playing around with dodging and ducking and moving away. It was her sword, and all of the power and strength and speed that Iglamine had been able to realise in her. She met Kitherea's water-smooth thrust to her heart with an upward cut that flung the lictor's rapier's point skyward and ought to have knocked it clean out of her hand. She stopped thinking about the pain in her knee and went back to being the Gideon Nav who never left Dreabur, who fought like it was her only ticket off-world. The lictor danced out and in again, close quarters, trying to slide her sword under and around Gideon's own. Gideon knocked the thing to the ground, the rapier scraping the flagstones with an awful screech. Kitherea retreated prettily, and Gideon smashed her guard and followed through with a huge, perfect overhand cut. It ought to have cleaved the lictor open from the shoulder to the gut. She'd wanted it to, but the edge of her sword sank into Kitherea's collarbone and bounced off like she was trying to cut steel. There was the faintest pink mark on the skin, and then nothing. Her two-hander had failed. Something in Gideon rolled over and gave up. Kitherea moved in for the kill, her sword flashing like a snake, like a whip, as Gideon moved half a second behind where she needed to be. She saved herself a skewered lung by clumsily blocking with the flat of her sword. The lictor's unholy strength made the longsword shudder on impact, and Gideon's forearm shuddered with it. Undeterred, Kitherea went for her numbed arm, sank the tip deep into the soft flesh above the bicep, met the bone, splintered something deep in there. Gideon gave ground, sword held in guard, clawing for distance now.
The blade was drooping in her hands, despite every iota of determination coursing through her body. She tried to conjure up some of the old, cruel caution with which Iglamine had so often sent her to the mat, watched Kitherea closely, stepped away from a feint, saw an opening, turned herself to iron and thrust forward, straight to her opponent's heart. Kitherea raised her free hand and caught the blade before it carved through her sternum. She had to step back with the force of the blow, but her frail, worn hand wrapped around the breadth of the blade and held it as easily as Nibirius's shitty trick trident knife had her rapier all those years ago in the training room. Gideon shoved. Her feet slipped for purchase on the ground, her knees screaming. Her arms squirted blood with the effort. Kitherea sighed. "Oh, you were gorgeous," said the lictor. "A thing apart." She batted Gideon's sword away with her hand. Then she advanced. "Step off, bitch," said Herohark, Nona Jesimus, behind her. Kitherea turned to look. The black-robed, black-hooded figure had stumbled forward, step by staggering step, away from the shelter of the tower wall. She was bookended by skeletons, skeletons too huge to have ever lived inside the greasy meat sock of anyone real. Each was 8 feet high, with ulnar bones like tree trunks and wicked bone spikes spiraling over their arms. "I wish the Ninth House would do something that was more interesting than skeletons," said Kitherea pensively. One of the monstrous constructs flung itself at Kitherea like she was a bomb it was ending its life upon. The second came shambling after it. Kitherea contemptuously dashed away one skeleton's enormous forearm spike. She shattered another with her rapier, and the spike, almost before it had finished crumbling, stretched and pushed itself back into shape. Hero wasn't stinting on the perpetual bone, and if she kept it up, she was going to be a perpetual corpse. Gideon rolled away, seized her sword, and crawled. Her pierced arm left a snail's trail of slippery red behind her. It was only years of training under Iglamine that gave her the guts to wobble herself upright before her adept, blind with blood, blade leant flat on her good shoulder. Two more dead giants were already knitting themselves together. Hero couldn't afford this, she thought dimly. Hero couldn't afford this at all. "You're learning fast," said the lictor, and she sounded honestly delighted. "But I'm afraid you've got a long way to go." Kitherea crooked her fingers toward the massive hole torn in the side of the tower. There was a cry from within, followed by an awful cracking, tearing, breaking sound, when the horrible, many-legged construct exploded through the hole. It was not as great nor as leggy as it had been before. It had torn itself free from Harrow's shackles, and in doing so had left most of itself behind. It was a miserable shadow of its previous bulk. Compared to anything normal, though, it was still a horror of waving stumps and tendrils, all lengthening and thickening, regrowing themselves even as she watched. It had been stuck, and now it was halved, but it could still regenerate. The huge, expressionless face gleamed whitely in the afternoon light, now teetering on a trunk too small for its mask, and broken glass pattered down its sides like drops of water as it crawled out. It sat its broken body on the terrace like a ball of white roots, swaying on two legs, a bitten spider. It wasn't fair. Kitherea had been right all along. There was nothing they could do. Even half destroyed, the bristling tentacles and lappets were raised 100 strong in the air. It staggered and aimed itself in their direction, and there was nowhere to run. No dodging, no escape. The lictor said, "None of you have learned how to die gracefully. I learned over 10,000 years ago." "I'm not done," said Gideon's half-dead necromancer. Harrow closed her hands. The last thing Gideon saw was the debris of her perpetual servants rattling toward them, bouncing through the air and over the flagstones, hardening in a shell over her and Camilla and Harrow as all those tendrils struck them at once. The noise was deafening. Wham! 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 Until it became a single hammer, a metered pounding. Wham! 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 The world vibrated around them. Everything was suddenly very dark. A wavering yellow light flicked on, and Gideon realized that against all odds, Camilla had somehow retained her pocket torch. They were closed in with the bowing iron trellises and the wilting, anciently dead bushes. The sky, the sea, and the rest of the garden were cut off behind a smooth, curved shell of what seemed to be solid, uninterrupted bone, like the hemisphere of a propped-up skull. Harrow swayed upright in the gloom as the beast tried to crack them open like a nut and looked at Camilla and Gideon through a face that was mostly blood. Not even blood sweat, just blood. Beneath her skin, blood vessels had detonated like mines. It was coming through her pores. She'd figured out how to make perpetual bone, half destroyed a giant dead spider from hell, and now she'd raised a solid wall 6 inches thick and was holding it up with sheer nerve. The Reverend Daughter of the Ninth House smiled, tiny and triumphant. Then she keeled into Gideon's arms. Gideon stumbled, sick with terror, kneeling them both down to the ground as Harrow lay like a broken rag doll. She forgot her sword, forgot everything as she cradled her used-up adept. She forgot the wrecked ligaments in her sword arm, her messed-up knee, the cups of blood she'd lost, everything but that tiny, smouldering, victorious smile. "Harrow, come on, I'm here," she told her, howling to be heard above the thunder of the construct's assault. "Siphon, damn it!" After what happened to the Eighth? Harrow's voice was surprisingly strong, considering she appeared to be all black robes and wounds. "Not ever again." "You can't hold this shit forever, Harrow. You couldn't hold this shit 10 minutes ago." "I don't have to hold it forever," said the necromancer. She contemplatively spat out a clot of blood, rolled her tongue around inside her mouth. "Listen, take the Sixth, get into a brace position, and I'll break you through the wall. Bones float. It's a long drop to the sea."
"Nope."
Harrow ignored her. "But all you have to do is survive the fall. We know that the ships have been called. Get off the planet as soon as you can. I'll distract her as long as possible. All you have to do is live."
"Harrow," said Gideon, "this plan is stupid, and you're stupid. No."
The Reverend Daughter reached up to take a fistful of Gideon's shirt. Her eyes were dark and glassy through the pain and nausea. She smelled like sweat and fear and about 9 tons of bone. She swabbed at her face again with her sleeve and said, "Griddle, you made me a promise. You agreed to go back to the Ninth. You agreed to do your duty by the locked tomb. Don't do this to me." "I owe you your life," said Harrow Hark. "I owe you everything." Harrow let go of her shirt and subsided to the floor. Her paint had all come off. She kept choking and sniffling on the thick rivulets of blood coming out her nose. Gideon tilted the wet, dark head so that her necromancer did not die untimely from drowning in her bloodied mucus, and tried desperately to think of a plan. Wham! One of the tentacles battered a crack in the shield. Daylight streamed in from outside. Harrow looked even worse in the light. Camilla said steadily, "Let me out. I can provide the distraction."
"Cram it already, Hecht,"
said Gideon, not looking away from her necromancer, who was painfully serene as even her eyebrows bled. I'm not getting haunted by Palamedes Sextus's crappy-ass revenant all telling me doctor facts for the rest of my life just because I let you get disintegrated.
The other plan isn't going to work, said Camilla evenly. If we could hold her off and wait on the shore, yes, but we can't.
Harrow sighed, stretched out on the floor.
Then we hold her off as long as we can, she said.
The crack knitted itself back together with painful, guttering slowness. Harrow snarled from the effort. They were plunged into darkness again, and the sounds from outside stopped, as though the construct was considering its next move. Camilla closed her eyes and relaxed. Her long, dark fringe fell over her face. It was that. Camilla in motion, now Camilla at rest, that made the tiny voice inside Gideon's head say, amazed, "We really are going to die." Gideon looked down at her necromancer. She had the heavy-lidded expression of someone who was concentrating in the knowledge that when they stopped concentrating, they would fall abruptly asleep. Harrow had gone unconscious once before. Gideon knew that the second time she let Harrow go under, there would probably not be any awakening. Harrow reached up. Her hand was trembling and tapped Gideon on the cheek.
Nav, she said. Have you really forgiven me?
Confirmed. They were all going to eat it.
Of course I have, you bozo. I don't deserve it.
Maybe not, said Gideon, but that doesn't stop me forgiving you.
Harrow. Yes?
You know I don't give a damn about the locked tomb, right? You know I only care about you, she said in a broken-hearted rush. She didn't know what she was trying to say, only that she had to say it now. With a bad, juddering noise, a tentacle had started to pound their splintering shelter again. Wham! I'm no good at this duty thing. I'm just me. I can't do this without you. And I'm not your real Cavalier Primary. I never could have been. Wham! 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 The crack reopened at this punishment. The sunlight got in, and fragments of bone dissolved in a shower of grey matter. It held, but Gideon didn't care. The construct wasn't there. The shelter wasn't there. Even Camilla, who had turned away to politely investigate something on the opposite wall, wasn't there. It was just her and Harrow and Harrow's bitter, high-boned, stupid little face. Harrow laughed. It was the first time she had ever heard Harrow really laugh. It was a rather weak and tired sound.
Gideon the Ninth, first flower of my house, she said hoarsely. You are the greatest cavalier we have ever produced. You are our triumph. The best of all of us. It has been my privilege to be your necromancer.
That was enough. Gideon the Ninth stood up so suddenly that she nearly bumped her head on the roof of the bone shield. Her arm complained loudly. She ignored it. She paced back and forth. Harrow watched her with only mild concern, studying the little space they were boxed into. The dead leaves, the cracked flagstones. Camilla. Camilla looked back at her, but she was already moving on. She couldn't do this to Camilla. The powdery grey drifts of bone, the iron spikes of the railings. Yeah, fuck it, she said. I'm getting us out of here.
Griddle!
Gideon limped over near the dusty flower beds. Wham! 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 She didn't have much time. But she only had one shot anyway. She struggled out of her black robe and thought about taking off her shirt in one mental blurt of panic, but decided she didn't need to. She peeled her gloves off her wet red palms and rolled up her sleeves for no reason except that it gave her something to do with her shaking hands. She made her voice as calm as possible. In a way, she was calm. She was the calmest she had ever been in her entire life. It was just her body that was frightened.
Okay, she said. I understand now. I really, truly, absolutely understand.
Harrowhark had leant back on her elbows and was watching her, black eyes lightless and soft. Nav, she said, the gentlest she had ever heard Harrow manage. I can't hold this for much longer.
Wham! Wham! Wham!
I don't know how you're holding it now, said Gideon, and she backed up, looked at what she was backing toward, looked back at her necromancer. She sucked in a wobbly breath. Harrow was looking at her with a classic expression of faint Nona Jessimus pity, as though Gideon had finally lost her intellectual faculties and might wet herself at any moment. Camilla watched her with an expression that showed nothing at all. Camilla the Sixth was no idiot. She said,
Harrow, I can't keep my promise, because the entire point of me is you. You get that right. That's what Cavaliers sign up for. There is no me without you. One flesh, one end.
A shade of exhausted suspicion flickered over her necromancer's face. Nav, she said, what are you doing? The cruelest thing anyone has ever done to you in your whole entire life, believe me, said Gideon. You'll know what to do, and if you don't do it, what I'm about to do will be no use to anyone. Gideon turned and squinted, gauged the angle. She judged the distance. It would have been the worst thing in the world to look back, so she didn't. She mentally found herself all of a sudden in front of the doors of Dreaber, 4 years old again and screaming, and all her fear and hate of them went away. Dreaber was empty. There was no Crux. There were no god-awful great-aunts. There were no restless corpses, no strangers in coffins, no dead parents. Instead, she was Dreaber. She was Gideon Nav, and Nav was a Niner name. She took the whole putrid, quiet, filth-strewn madness of the place, and she opened her doors to it. Her hands were not shaking anymore. Wham! 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 The structure bowed and creaked. Big chunks were falling away now, letting in wide splotches of sunlight. She felt movement behind her, but she was faster. For the Ninth, said Gideon. And she fell forward, right on the iron spikes.